गोपी जन पाला पा गिरिवार दाह होरी गोपी जन बाला बा गिरिवार दाहती यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरा वन चाहरी यमुना तीरा वन चाहरी जय राधा माधव पंजाबी हरी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरि हरि हरे राम 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 हरि हरि जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा जय प्रभुपदा निचय गो हरि बो हरि बो Hari Bo Nitai Go Hari Bo Hari Bo Nitai Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bo Chaitanya Lila Prabhupada Shripad Paramahamsa Prabhupada Sarasvati Sri Sriman His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Savior of the World, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Nityalila Pravishnu Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Prabhupada Sotara Satyashi, Srimad, His Divine Grace, Srila Bhakti, Saranta Sarasvati, Thakur Maharaj, Swami Guru, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Goti, Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. ISKCON BBT Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Tantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Samapita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Nitai Go Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi, Guru, and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're in chapter 22, 11th canto, text 37, lacks a purport. And then text 38 has a purport. So I'll just chant myself 37, and we'll chant together 38. 37. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Manakarma Mayam Rinam Indriyai Panchabir Yutam Lokalokam Prayatyanya Atmatad Anuvartate. Translation. Lord Krishna said, the material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. The spirit soul, although different from this mind, follows it. Interesting. Text 38. Dhyayan mano anu vishayan krishnan vanushrutan ata ujyat siddhat karma tantram smritis tad anu samyati jayan mano nu vishayan krishchan panu sutan ata ujyat siddhat karma tantram smritis tad anu samyati jayan mano nu vishayan krishnan panu sutan ata ujyat siddhat karma tantram smritis tad anu samyati jayan mano nu vishayan krishnan panu sutan ata ujyat siddhat karma tantram smritis tad anu samyati. Anyone else? No. Okay. Word meaning. Dhyayan. Meditating. Mana. The mind. Anu. Regularly. Vishayan. On the sense objects. Dhristan. Seen. Va. or Anushrutan, heard from Vedic authority. Ata, subsequently. Udyat, rising. Siddhat, dissolving. Karma Tantram, bound to the reactions of fruit of work. Smriti, remembrance. Tat Anu, after that, Samyati is destroyed. Okay, translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The mind bound to the reactions of fruitive work always meditates on the objects of the senses, both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with its objects of perception, and thus its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. Please repeat. The mind, bound to the reactions of fruitive work, always meditates on the objects of the senses. Both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with its objects of perception, and thus its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. Purport, one may ask how the subtle body or mind gives up its connection with one physical body and enters another. Of course, in Bhagavad Gita, it mentions that most people don't know the answer to that question. As in 15th chapter, maybe we'll get to that. Such entering and leaving of physical bodies is called birth and death by conditioned souls. One utilizes his present senses to meditate on the visible objects of this world, beautiful women, palatial estates, and so on. And similarly, one daydreams about the heavenly planets described in the Vedas. As death occurs, the mind is pulled away from the objects of its immediate experience and enters another body to experience a new set of sense objects. As the mind undergoes total reorientation, there is the apparent loss of one's previous mentality and creation of a new mind. There is apparent loss of one's previous mentality and creation of a new mind. So it's not a loss of the creation, but that's two different things. It's the loss of one's previous mentality, and also there's a creation of a new mind, though actually the same mind is experiencing, but in a different way. New mind. We always talk about, I changed my mind, like that. So we're not really changing, it's the same mind. The conditioned soul is overwhelmed by the constant flow of material experience consisting of direct perceptions and abstract contemplation of the objects of this world. One thereby loses his transcendental memory of his relationship with God. As soon as one identifies with this world, he forgets his eternal identity and surrenders to the false ego created by Maya. Jayan mano nuvishtayan drishtan vanu shrutan nata udyat siddhat karma tantram smriti stad anu samyati. The mind, translation again, the mind bound to the reactions of fruitive work always meditates on the objects of the senses, both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with its objects of perception, and thus its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. Now, let me read the previous translation of 37. Lord Krishna said, "The material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. The spirit soul, although different from this mind, follows it." Om Jnanati Matanda Shah Jananza Salakaya Chaksun Militanya Kajman Shri Gurmina Hare. So the subject matter is, in one sense, basic, but also so profound, at least compared with modern philosophy and what's out there, as we say, in terms of people trying to understand what's going on, people's choice. It's maybe not exactly a conscious choice, maybe it's an unconscious choice to devote their entire attention and lives to external Bahir Arthamanina, as Prahlad Maharaj is saying. They become distracted. Bhagaishvara Prashaktanam Taya Parita Chaitasam Vyavasyatmika Buddhisamadu Navadiyate. They can't focus on what to speak on, focus on the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. But people in general can't at all focus on the problems of life, of birth, death, disease, and old age. Yeah, they focus on it pragmatically. I mean, when it comes up, okay, which doctor am I going to go to? Which hospital? I hope I have enough insurance. And they'll focus like that, but they don't focus it in terms of the big picture, that this is hardwired into life in the material world. So that's unfortunate. And this verse explains how this forgetfulness, this inherent tendency to forget and to ignore and to become distracted and not to search for true reality is actually, and some people have theological problems with this, so it is arranged by Krishna. One verse that I think would be, maybe we'll touch on it maybe more than once in this class, that we should keep in mind as a background, information, we can say. Manakshri jati vai dehan gunan karmani chakmana tan manak sri jata maya tato jivasya samsmriti. This is, interestingly enough, this is Shukadeva Goswami's final instruction to Maharaj Parikit. He instructed so many wonderful things. The final instruction pertains to today's lesson. The material bodies, qualities, and activities of the spirit soul are created by the material mind. That mind is itself created by the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord, Maya. And thus the soul assumes material existence. Tato jivyasa, jivasya samsmriti. Of course, we're also hearing that the the mind is shaped. In the previous text, 37, it says that the material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. So, again, if we're quote unquote guilty of reading Srila Prabhupada's books and the continuation of his work scrutinizingly, then we have to ask questions. We were hearing the final instruction by Maharaj, by Shukadev Goswami to Maharaj Prakriti, that the material body's qualities and activities of the spirit soul are created by the material mind. But here we're hearing it works the other way too, that the material mind is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. So we engage in different activities, and then that has certain repercussions, not just grossly, but also it will cause the mind to think in particular ways. So there is this interaction between our activities and the mind. Now keep in mind that this final instruction also included not only the qualities created by mind, but the bodies as well, and the activities, the qualities also, as well as the activities of the spirit soul. That's Dehan Gunan Karmani. But then what creates the mind? How does this rascal mind is creating all this entanglement. So how does the mind, the material mind, we can say, how that comes? That's the handiwork of Maya. The material mind is created by Maya. So we have a reference here. It's a slightly different type, different wording in the Sanskrit of Dhrishtan Vanu Shrutan. That what is directly seen and what is heard about. There are different applications of that, and it comes up in different parts of the Bhagavatam. There's a whole topic which we could discuss if we had time, but it's called skepticism. That the whole idea is that that what you see is not exactly what you get. In other words, that this is a whole tradition of skepticism in Western philosophy. And if you read in philosophy, if you look at, not that I looked at it so deeply, I don't want to pretend that I did, but to the extent that I've checked it, the subject called epistemology, it seems like 90% of epistemology, theory of knowledge, what is knowledge, how do we know that our beliefs are justified, etc.? And what's the real standard, what we can really call knowledge? They think about that. They actually make money teaching and speculating on that subject. But it seems like about 90% of the whole project of epistemology is just to refute skepticism. And it's kind of like a tug of, it's like a combat between all the skeptical ideas and how would you respond to different skeptical attacks. So we also, in one sense, the skepticism is just like doubt. Doubt is one of the five components of intelligence that's described in Kapila Shiksha. So the skepticism is doubt, and in general, skepticism is good at the beginning. Prabhupada explains in the purport. It's not very good when you're actually speaking to an authority. And you become like radically skeptical, and you're doubting. Then you should start doubting your doubting, I suppose. But you become so skeptical that you're actually speaking. I'll give an example, like a little bit of Prabhupada nectar. That I was in the Henry Street Temple. I didn't live there, but I used to visit. And I won't say it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. I would have loved to live there. It was so ecstatic, actually. And Srila Prabhupada was giving class, and it was a question of authority, and I saw how someone's skepticism was sort of melted away by Srila Prabhupada's amazing, powerful, transcendental presence. One Indian lady was mentioning in the class, publicly she mentioned, that her mentor for her PhD thesis, he wanted her to write about something about Indology and Vaishnavism, so she was going to write a whole thesis on Rasalila, something like that. Of course, Prabhupada was a little bit discouraging in that area. And then she said something, but my mentor, the professor, told me that that's what I should write about. And here's Prabhupada sitting there. So it's a kind of like a tension between her authority and the university and this amazing presence of Vedic authority sitting right in front of her. And Srila Prabhupada kind of gave her a hint. And he said, when you're approaching the fire, then you could feel the heat. And it seemed like it had something to do with the distance between her and Srila Prabhupada. And she was not that far away from Srila Prabhupada. And then she kind of like, in a very nice way, she lost it. She kind of started like, sort of a nervous laugh. And you can see that, I don't know if intellectually she caught what Prabhupada was saying, but she could see that, in other words, we can say she shifted her without her even meaning to do this, but I kind of saw that she was accepting Prabhupada as an authority, even more than her university mentor. So skepticism and doubt is nice. Like, for instance, I'm a little skeptical. I'm not sure that I'm this body. That's good. That's a good placement of doubt. It's one of the parts of intelligence. When I was trying, I was so fallen that I couldn't even be a good hippie. I was just like really, I don't know, I don't want to, you know, get into that. But I was in a Forum Cafe on Avenue B. This is adjacent to Tompkins Square Park. This is those golden years of 65 and 66 when Prabhupada came and everything. I was in the right place at the right time. Somehow got lucky, you can say. So the one wizard came up to me. There were a lot of wizards going around. And there's one very famous devotee in ISKCON. He still dresses like a wizard. He's in Vrindavan. I won't mention his name. He's far out. He even told me, he said, I'm a man of the 60s. He's don't say who it is, but after we can confer. And he came up to me, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and he started whispering in my ear. He says, how do you know that you're going to die? Maybe you'll live forever. And it was kind of like exciting to hear that. He said, yeah, maybe, because I was a little kid. I was 4 years old. I got really bent out of shape when I heard about death from my grandmother. It was totally depressing. I became a junior philosopher at age 4. What's the point? What's the point of anything? I stopped riding my little tricycle, and I started, tears were coming out of my eyes. It was like the, you ever see the movie called The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner? I mean, I was about to come to the finish line. You just stop. It's like existential. It doesn't make any point to even continue pedaling the tricycle. I couldn't sleep for 3 days. Anyway. When this wizard told me, this is years later, of course, and I was very mature now. I had a big beard and everything. People used to think I was, anyway, I didn't want to give a class about yours truly. But when he said that, it was kind of like exciting to me. because we should be skeptical. Of course, we say, well, we know everyone we've seen has died, but that's not conclusive. Maybe I'll be an exception. Maybe I won't die. Of course, then we meet Prabhupada, and we meet Bhagavad Gita, and then we could start evaluating. Who should be my authority? My grandmother, the wizard, or Srila Prabhupada? It's like a no-brainer, at least for us. So we have Chitasi hi dhruvam mitra dhruvam janma mitasya cha. Bas, as we say. Even coming from the West, we learned how to say that. Bas. Finished. Conclusive. That's it. For one who is born, death is certain. And for one who has died, birth is certain. You can say, wait a second, how does that work? We'll be freed from having to take birth again. How did we used to say? We had a jingle like that. We say, no more death, no more birth, no more coming back to earth. Remember that one? Back from a few decades ago. So we can say, well, then how, why, but then we hear that if you're going to go back to home, back to Godhead, as we say, then you do take birth again in the womb of a gopi, in a planet where Lord Sri Krishna is enacting his pastimes. Did any of you ever hear that? No? I'm the only one who heard that? Pran Govinda, you never heard Prabhupada's teaching? Thank you. It's a relief to hear that you heard that and you even know where it's written. So, okay, so let's move ahead here a little bit. So this says, drishtam api drishtavat, comes up in different places in the context of the, today's first text or second text. It's that which is heard and that which is seen directly and that which is heard about. So it has different applications. Katumbeshu nasajeta na pramatyat katumbapi vipaschin nashparam pasyed adrishtam api drishtavat. So this is, I believe it's Uddhava Gita, canto 11, same canto, five chapters earlier. A householder taking care of many dependent family members should not become materially attached to them, nor should he become mentally unbalanced, considering himself to be the Lord, even with a small L, but the Lord. An intelligent householder should see that all possible future happiness, just like that which he has already experienced, is temporary. So that's adrishtam api drishtavat. In other words, this is 11:17:52. Katumbeshu nasajita. We hear this is a famous one. Naprama jyat katumbapi. Katumbapi means even though one is apparently the doer maintaining a family, katumbapi, naprama jyat. Don't become crazy. Even though you have that responsibility, but don't start thinking that that it really, really ultimately depends upon me. It's like just like Lord Sri Krishna was, not Lord Sri Krishna, it was Narada Muni was preaching to Mrigari, the hunter, and he was saying, how could I break my bow? How will I support my family? This is my gotra. We're a bunch of hunters. And we have this amazing tradition where we kill them half dead. This is the way I was taught, by my authority. And Narada Muni taught him to become skeptical of such authority. To the point where, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but he broke his bow. Not that the bow was so difficult to break, but not physically, but psychologically, it was very hard for him to do that because he was putting his faith on a better authority, Narada Muni. So another place that comes up, and this goes a little deeper in the sense that this gets into ontology and again that this is like this will induce us towards radical skepticism. I don't know if you want to hear this. I think you do. This is an add-on verse that you could, I guess, I don't know the literary detail of it, but some acharyas included in Bhagavatam and some don't. Our acharya, Srila Prabhupada, has decided to include it in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And I'm kind of glad that he did, because it kind of is very fertile material, spiritual material, for contemplation and philosophical reflection. Again, we have the same. Adrishtam drishtavan nakshed, bhutam svapnavad anyata, bhutam bhavad bhavishyachcha, suktam sarva rahodahaha. Now, interestingly enough, that two terms that we're focusing on, that adrishtam drishtavam, adrishtam drishtavan nakshed, this adrishtam and drishtavam is not included in the translation, but in the word for word, Srila Prabhupada gives it as future happiness, unseen, and light direct experience. So it's the same idea. It's people, if you're religious, and then you'll go to adrishta, or not seen, the unseen, but you're hearing from Vedic authority. We even heard that in the purport today. From Vedic authority, and then that's that topic of why does Vedic authority recommend sense gratification? Well, that's what people demand. So it does it just like yatha vaisajya rochana. It's rochana, it's just an impetus so people will perform beneficial religious activity, which will gradually elevate them to renunciation and eventually, hopefully, in some future lifetime to devotional service. This is the Vedic scheme. What is the Vedic wake-up call? Now, you would know, some of you would know, many of you would know, I'm forgetting, I think it's Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad, that Asato Ma Satgamaha Tamasi Ma Jyotirgamaha Mrityu Amritam Gamaha. This is, what does it say? It's a wake-up call. It's not Vaishnava wake-up call, it's general Vedic wake-up call. But it applies to anyone who's a little thoughtful and is trying to become worthy of being called a human being. What is it? Get out of illusion. Go to eternal reality. And you all know this one. Get out of the darkness. Tamasi Ma. Don't stay in the darkness. Jyotir Gamaha. Go to the Jyoti. Go to the light. And what's the last one? Mrito Ma Amritam Gamaha. Don't keep accepting temporary material bodies. Become immortal. This is a wonderful, triumphant, you know, The horns are blowing, the conches are blowing. This is like, we're not even in Vaishnava arena yet. We're just in the general Vedic. So, the text that I'm referring to, that add-on text, is that, yes, Vedic authority approves this, but that's called Adrishtam, that's the unseen, meditation on the unseen, is that people who are kind of religious, even Christians, but in a more detailed and, I would say, accurate and precisely accurate way, we have the Vedic descriptions of the different wonderful pleasures and joys and material opulence that you can get in Svargalok, and even higher than Svargalok. Higher heavenly planets, Svargalok, different places. So you don't see that right around you, but in Vedic times, people accepted it as reality. There was just no question. And we also should accept it, that these things are there. We don't want to go there. We want to go to Vaikuntha, Goloka, but that is still there. And so that's what the adrishta, what the unseen. So, but most people are more on the gross platform, especially in the Western world and and in India becoming more and more. So they're just distracted by the sense objects. So the mind becomes fixed on these things. And then whatever state of mind, yanyanvapisma varambhavam chajati antikalevanam tam tam evati kunteya satatat bhava bhavita. Whatever state of mind we remember at the time of death, then we'll get that situation. How does that work? The objects of the senses, the adrishtam, objects of the kind of sense enjoyment we'll be able to, I'm not recommending this, but the kind of sense enjoyment, how sweet it is that we can enjoy by following the Vedas and going to some heavenly planet, that is also described as the Vishaya Prabala. You remember that Vishaya Prabala from the banyan tree, the upside down banyan tree, that the Vedic hymns, and in other words, when it's talking about Vedas, it's talking about the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas and the twigs on this upside down tree are the objects of the senses. And Karmanu Bandini Manusya Loke, that there are other kinds of roots that go down, and those are the fruitive activities of human society. I'm not able to pinpoint it right now, but in that extended analogy or metaphor, you have the Vedas figure. In fact, it begins in the purport. Prabhupada says, well, what about the Vedas? And then he goes right into this analogy. So Vedic knowledge, karmakanda, is almost entanglement itself. I mean, that upside down banyan tree is a whole system of entanglement. So why would the Vedas do that? Well, we already discussed that. So, is there anything else? Why is all this arrangement? It sounds like conspiracy theory. Here we go, right? Conspiracy theory. But according to Vedic knowledge, this is the most incredible conspiracy theory. This is, in one sense, a lesser skepticism would be skeptical of that. You're saying, come on, you're saying the world is unreal? I didn't even translate that verse that other Adrishtam Drishtavan Nak said. Everything happening within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. Now this, if you got superficial skepticism, you say, come on, you're telling me it's a dream. It's a dream is when I go to sleep at night. This isn't a dream, I'm awake right now. If it's a dream, how come we all seem to share it? You know, that's like superficial skepticism. Come on, telling me. Or is it, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a dream. See, it's authorized. Life is but a dream. But deeper skepticism is like the Matrix model. Deeper skepticism is all a virtual reality. We have very intelligent people, like my hero in the material world, my hero, well, he's a religious person, Michael Behe. He does a fantastic job. I'm sorry, some people don't agree with me. I think he does a fantastic job of dissing, of completely shredding Darwinism. Fantastic. I'd like to read his book because it helps me become stronger as a theist and become less contaminated by atheism. But he, as intelligent as he is, his skepticism doesn't go deep enough. In other words, when he gives the example of the Matrix model, the idea that we're actually just a brain in a vat. And I'm not saying that's what we are, that's a movie. But the point is that things could be that different from what we perceive them to be. So in one sense, the superficial skepticism would say, come on, don't give me these absurd examples, brain in a vat, world is just virtual reality, everything's just a dream. Hello, it's actually true, according to Vedic authority. We just heard that everything happening within time, that means everything we see around us, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. Now, it doesn't mean that the world that we were discussing last night in Spanish home program, it doesn't mean that there's no reality whatsoever to the world. After all, we say the world is a dream, but it's kind of, there's two dreamers involved. One is the Anu, and one is the Vibhu. The Anu, that's us. So it's an interactive virtual reality. We all have our little dreams, and super soul arranges that the world, you know, kind of reinforces our fantasies. And we live like that, and then we take the next body according, as we're hearing in these verses. But also, there's another dreamer involved. Yatkar anana vachale vachatisma yoga nidram anantam saroma kupa adara shaktim avalamya param swamurtim. Mahavishnu, he dreams too. Where did our dreaming come from? He's the champion dreamer. When we dream, we have some illusion. We go to sleep and wake up and we have a few dreams. So I'm really happy that my dreams are not... some devotees, they dream of Krishna and they dream of Prabhupada and they dream of Gurudev. And I dream... once in a while, I had some wonderful dreams about Srila Prabhupada, but they don't happen anymore. I'm just such a rascal. But my dreams are just like, just about all the anxieties that are there. Missing my flight and getting confused, getting lost, taking the wrong train in the New York subway system and knowing how to get out. It's just like that's what's listening. But one thing I'll say, that almost all my dreams are ISKCON dreams. They're all like about devotees and trying to go to some preaching program or training. So at least I'm at that level. Something's better than nothing. So yeah, the other dreamer is Mahavishnu. So that protects us from Mayavad or impersonal conclusion, Brahma Satyam Jagat Nitya. You don't say Jagat, no, it's completely false, no. It may be a dream, but if it's Mahavishnu's dream, we have to place some value on it. And there is value in the material world, and it gives us the human form of life, gives us the opportunity to get out. There are some other things. The verse discusses a lot about the mind and how it... it's very interesting, the idea that we know we change bodies. The gross body is finished, and another gross body. But it also feels like we have a new mind. You become a baby, and your mind develops a little bit, and then you start liking to have toys and different things. It's like all brand new, right? It's like a whole new thing. That's why the previous verse says that it forgets. How does it put it? That's its ability to distinguish past and future. In other words, you think that even the mind is new, but no, the mind is not. So how is it the mind is now attached to a whole different set of sensa? What to speak of transmigration? We talk about reincarnation. More precisely, we're really talking about transmigration, because it's not like you always get a human form of life. We're so fortunate. Nehabikrama natyasti pratyavayona vidyate sparmamapyasya. What is it? Dharmasya trayate mahato bayat. We're saved from the greatest kind of fear. He says nothing to fear but fear itself. So what's the most fearsome fear? Is losing the human form of life. Prabhupada doesn't spell that out in Bhagavad Gita. But was it Ishopanishad or in Srimad Bhagavatam? He specifically mentions maybe more than one place. That's the greatest type of fear. So we're protected from that. But not everyone else is. That's why you all, there was the temple president in Boston. Those who were not going out every day on Sankirtan, book distribution, he called us. I was on traveling Sankirtan, but only a year and a half. But mostly I was in the stayed Stay Back for Lunch Bunch, it was called. The Stay Home for Lunch Bunch. So I was in that group. But ding, senior moment, ding, ding, ding. Again, what was I just saying before that? Yeah, you know all about different centers and histories of all different places. Yeah, those are the devotees that I remember at that time. But it was going to be really rich and ripe and relevant and pertinent and funny, and I can't remember it, so you'll have to forgive me. Frustrating, isn't it? So this idea of the mind that you start. Okay, so it's not just reincarnation, it's transmigration, that those who are not under Srila Prabhupada's the shade of his lotus feet, then, or at least under the lotus feet of some other very great Vaishnava, I'd say, be inclusive. The point is they could lose this human form of life, and then what happens, then you really get a drastically different set of sense objects. You could take birth as a hog, and you won't even mention what you really relish in that situation. Even Lord Brahma had that problem. So it would seem, you see, this virtual reality is not only on the gross level, but also on the subtle level. It's so compelling, it's so convincing that not only do I have a new body, but I have a new mind now. That this is all, the whole thing is starting all over. It was I like that phrase in the first text. It says, oh no, in the purport, I'm sorry, in the purport to the second text, it says, as the mind undergoes total reorientation, there is the apparent loss of one's previous mentality and creation of a new mind. But that's not what's actually happening. It's just that your mentality is catered to by the next gross situation. But there is a continuum. That's why whatever state of mind one remembers when he quits his body, he gets that situation. But if you're, you don't get it the same way. I don't know, I shouldn't mention names, so I won't, but there's one famous personality who was preaching the Playboy culture, and his meditation was on rabbits, bunnies, and like that. Pretty horrible stuff. That's what I was brought up on. And so Prabhupada, it's a miracle that Prabhupada could untwist my mind from such obsessions. And so he'll get that. He'll get full facility. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be in a penthouse on Fifth Avenue somewhere in Manhattan and have such incredibly opulent house like that. You'll be just be hopping around in the woods with two even bigger than mine ears, two gigantic ears, and you'll get it like that. And when you get it like that, you won't have any kind of sense at all that I had this mind in the past. Even if you read about it, you won't quite catch it. So anyway, this is just, I tried to interweave a little bit. It's been a little challenging because I've been, since I become a member of this group called Sabha. It's an ISKCON group, an advisory group. My time workload seems to have increased, but I'm trying my best. So thank you so much for your kind intention. If anyone has any question or comment. Yes, Monty. Microphone. Pichai.
Yesterday we were at the bank and we were having a conversation with a bank employee, and I guess I made some skeptic comment. And
what was he, a Catholic? A boy?
Actually,
what kind of boy was it?
He was a bank employee.
A bank employee. Yeah. I heard Catholic boy. A bank employee.
Yeah, bank employee.
That's quite different. Okay.
But it's funny that you asked what he was. He was a converted Muslim, he told us. Anyway, so I made some kind of skeptic comment, and then to that he said skepticism is a sign of creativity, and creativity is a sign of knowledge. So thought to share that.
Yeah, the devotee is supposed to be thoughtful. Then it's a question of finding out some authority. Otherwise, we'll be so skeptical that we will just go around in big circles, and then someone will say, then you can say everything is up to doubt, but then what's your authority to say that? There may be something that's not up to doubt. And then we say, well, it's the Vedas and Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But then they say, well, see, there's a difference between deep skepticism about what's going on, ontologically, we can say, and just sophism, you know, just this idea of just defeating arguments just for the sake of defeating them, and playing with words like that. So ultimately, we're all in the same boat. We're in this crisis of birth and death. This is a crisis, and if you want to just hold on to your skepticism, but our authority of Vedic knowledge actually encourages very radical skepticism about what's taken to be reality. Yes, it is like a conspiracy theory, and this conspirator is Krishna and Lord Brahma. There's this huge conspiracy to put us in this super high security prison. We're not brains in a vat, but we're in a super high security prison. So what you see and what you take for granted is not what's really happening. We're hearing some shastra about that. It's a dream. It's not like this is reality, what's around us. It's real and in a certain sense, but it's not real in the way people take it. So it's it's not even time yet. We still have about 2 minutes. Any other? I'm sorry. I hope I touched him.
I have a question in regards to the mind. So we hearing you were saying how the, you know, our mind is formed. I guess my question is, what happens to our mind when we, how does it form as far as when we are thinking about Krishna, or we're engaged in, our consciousness is engaged in Krishna consciousness, our conscious, not physically, but our mind is absorbed in Krishna. Yeah, what happens to the mind?
Yeah, well, we're not nihilists. It's not like we're left with nothing. There's no mind. The radical skeptic David Hume, in philosophy, and after he demolished all ideas of science as well as religion, and he just kind of like, nothing is real. And then they said, no matter, never mind. And there was no matter, no mind, everything. So we don't go like that. There is a verse in Bhagavatam that it says, Chalayat yasu yakho sham nigirnam analoyata. That's the whole verse. And it says, Kapila Shiksha. And it says that by devotional service, the subtle body of the living entity, and we know what the subtle body is, mind, intelligence, pulse, becomes dissolved, just as the fire in the stomach digests all different kinds of food. If you have good digestion, it digests all kinds of food you put into it. So in the same way, devotional service just melts down the subtle body. So that means that we have no mind anymore? We become mindless robots? No. Then it just means that the material mind is dissolved. And then the spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, then they kick in the sense that they become, then they have their spiritual field to work in. So when we're using our mind and thinking about Krishna, and using our intelligence, trying to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, etc., then we're invoking spiritual intelligence. The Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tham. You know, and this Bhakti Yoga is called Buddhi Yoga. So it's not like there's no mind, there's no intelligence, and there's no ego. I don't know if you'd use the word ego exactly, but there's no false ego. There is identity. And so we don't have to be afraid that we're just like zero. We end up with zero. We end up with our real mind, our real intelligence, our real creativity, all these things. Does that address itself to your question? No? Okay. So I guess it's time to end. Thank you so much for your kind attention. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Antara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.